Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
New Horror Express, your monthly podcast giving a look at the latest in horror, as well as chatting to the best breaking talent the genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and in this month's episode, I will be taking a look back at the Dead by Dawn Horror Film Festival, which took place in April here in Edinburgh. Some of you may have followed along with the Facebook Live videos we did over that weekend, where me and my guest correspondents, Jamie and Frank, looked at each new feature, give my top three feature films that I saw, as well as my top three animated shorts and my top three shorts. In the second half of the episode, we have an interview with Jill Gavergazian, where she talks about her new short, 42 Count. She talks about her most famous short, The Stylist, the planned Stylist feature film, as well as many other things, the politics of festivals, film festivals, that is, and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's a real fun interview. So without any further ado, let's get on with the show. First of all, we're going to look at the animated charts. As always, all the animated shorts were shown together in one strand that Dead by Dawn like to call the 2D and deranged program. This year there was 12 animated shorts, all of which were pretty decent. Some were obviously stronger than others, but none of them were bad. All of them had interesting points. All of them had their own little things that, you know, made them entertaining watches. And yeah, it was definitely hard to boil it down to a top three. There was a total of 12 animated shorts. Six of these were by British claymation animator Lee Hardcastle, who you may know from his YouTube channel, and does a variety of parody and tributes of different horror movies and different things. Some does some original ones and also some takes on classic horror films in claymation. Probably his takes on The Thing are amongst his most famous. His regular character Clay Cat has a version of The Thing. Also, there was a Thing Frozen crossover that he did that was shown a couple of years ago at Dead by Dawn. But anyway, now on to the top three. Coming in at number three is The Death Dad and Son, which was a frankly charming, sweet, poignant animated short. Probably not what you expect from a horror film festival or animated short being shown at a horror film festival. But there was also plenty of moments of black humor. But this was, yeah, it was a really sweet short. It was about the son of death and his wish to become a guardian angel and how that played out. And it was just really well made. It was the longest of the animated short, coming in at 14 minutes. But yeah, stylistically, it looked very good. There was a real emotion to the story, and it developed the relationship of Death and his son, as bizarre as that sounds, really well. And it certainly charmed the Dead by Dawn audience, as it picked up the audience award for best animated short. But for me, it comes in at number three. Coming in at number two was Belial's Dream. As I'm sure you know, as dedicated horror fans, Belial is the thing in the basket in the Basket Case movies. And this animated short did exactly what it says on the tin. It goes into the strange mind of Belial to see what he dreams about. Well, it's not so much a dream as a complete nightmare. There was a lot of surreal, bizarre imagery in this that is not easy to forget. It's certainly a memorable short. It's nightmarish. It's very, could be very Eraserhead-like, even though obviously it's inspired by the Basket Case movies. There's definitely a very Lynchian vibe to this short, and it was directed by Rob Grant, who has had various animated shorts appear at the Dead by Dawn festival over the years, and seems to be something of a festival favorite. And yeah, it's easy to see why, because this was another impressive piece of work, which comes in at number two on my list of favorite animated shorts shown at this year's Dead by Dawn Festival. But it does not quite make the number one spot. And the number one spot was Clay Cat's Evil Dead 2. Now, this is one of the aforementioned Lee Harcastle's animated shorts. And I thought this might be cheating a little bit, because I was going to go for one that was new, I hadn't seen. There was various ones of the Lee Harcastle ones I had already seen on his YouTube. But yeah, every one of the six that were shown are absolute gems. They're really funny, they're really well made. There's yeah, lots of jokes, both visual jokes and verbal jokes. And yeah, each of them was a delight to watch. It would be hard to pick a favorite amongst them, but it was this loving parody stroke tribute to the Evil Dead 2, seeing Clay Cat go around the, and do the Evil Dead 2 kind of main set pieces, and seeing those iconic scenes done in claymation. There's just something very, very funny about that. And yes, it was just a really good, really entertaining watch. And that is why it comes in at my number one spot for animated short. Next up, live action shorts. The live action shorts were split into three separate programs: the It's Your Funeral shorts, the Not in Kansas Anymore shorts, and the What You Make It shorts. The latter of which is a regular strand where festival organizer Adele Hartley puts shorts that are not exactly horror, but have something dark or twisted or something about them that would appeal to a horror fan base, but cannot be exclusively labeled as a horror short. There was a total of 21 shorts shown across the three programs, and the quality throughout remained very high. Most of the shorts were very strong. I was impressed by a lot of them. There was very few that I thought were not that good, or I wasn't that impressed by. There was a couple that I wasn't like blown away by, but there were more, I thought they were kind of meh, rather than there was none that I out and out disliked. The audience award for this category went to an Australian short called The Mother Situation, where three grasping children try to basically bump off their mother to get the inheritance after the mother makes the decision that she does not want to end her life where she had previously decided that she had wanted to end her life. It was an entertaining short, and it was funny, and it was well done. It was a little one note. It wasn't one of my favorites, but it was still entertaining. It was still a good laugh, and it did have a hilarious post-credit dedication that simply said to mother, which had the audience in stitches, me included. But that being said, it did not make it into my top three. So now we'll dive into what did. In at number three is You Made Your Bed, Now Lie in It, which is a Norwegian short directed by Alexander Zwart and deals with the question, what would you do if you thought you only had a few days to live? In the case of the character Knut, who is the lead in this short and is an old farmer who lives in an isolated part of Norway, he decides that he won't go down without a fight and lets the sheep go running wild and barricades himself in. And it's a very entertaining short. I won't give anything else away. I'll just give you that basic synopsis in case you manage to track it down, which I would highly recommend that you do. It has an excellent central performance from actor Sverre Horg as Knut, the old farmer. And one of those actors who has one of those very characterful, expressive, shall we say, lived in, no disrespect, faces. No disrespect to the actor is what I was saying there. Honestly, it was an excellent performance, a very entertaining performance. And it is a short that has a very typically dry, absurdist Scandinavian humour running throughout it. Not quite as dry and as absurdist as something like a pigeon sat on a branch reflecting on existence. I mean, that's the extreme end of dry Scandinavian humour, I believe. But this was very entertaining. If there was one little downside, it was what happens at the end is kind of signposted at the start in some way. There's a certain obviousness to the kind of punchline of the short, but it's done in a very entertaining way, and you don't expect all of the ending. That's all I will say about that. But I will also say that it was a very beautifully filmed short. It was obviously filmed in a kind of, like I said, an isolated part of Norway, and it looked absolutely lovely. It was very nice, very nicely shot, and yeah, just a very entertaining, very darkly comedic, but also very thoughtful little short. And one of the very best to be screened at this year's Dead by Dawn. In at number two is R.I.P., a Spanish short brought to us by filmmakers Kai Casas and Albert Pinto. Hopefully I've pronounced both of those names correctly. It tells the story of a woman preparing the funeral of her husband. Unfortunately, on the day of the week, her husband comes back from the dead. This is not a zombie tale, however, as he comes back just as himself. To talk about it too much more, like with all these shorts, it's very hard to review shorts without giving the whole game away. But put it this way, initially she is delighted that her husband's back, and then she realizes there is a lot of awaiting guests for this week. And so it becomes a very dark comedy about keeping up appearances and putting on your best face. And I think what makes it great is just the escalation of things, the escalations of the silliness. There is a lot of gore, a lot of very good gore effects, actually. And it starts off very simply. It starts off just not just a kind of fairly funny conversation between the husband and wife, as the husband is in the initial first scene of the short is still alive just before he died, as they're preparing, as he's knows he only got a few days to live, not unlike the character in the previous short I was talking about. But yeah, and then it just escalates and it gets sillier, it gets bloodier, throughout its 16-minute running time. And I think that's what makes it really great. And the other thing that makes it really great is just the look of it. It's stylistically looks really interesting. It just has a very bold look. It's a look that's not dissimilar to fellow Spanish filmmaker Alex de la Iglesias, particularly his film The Last Circus. And yeah, it's those elements put together. Excellent black humor, excellent gore, really nice stylish film. And that's what makes it my number two short for Dead by Dawn. But topping the list is Crying Bitch, a Japanese short brought to us by director Reiki Sano. I hope I pronounced that correct once again. Who, fun fact, studied under Lloyd Kaufman. And you could imagine this being a product of trauma. This is a completely mad, over-the-top type of short. It's the There's lots of things going on here. There's lots of over-the-top silly jokes. There's, yeah, lots of entertaining practical effects and gore, and yeah, all those things going on. It's also clear that the director was inspired, or I assume was inspired, by Takeshi Miike, because it starts in a very creepy place of, it's a much quieter horror to start with. It could have been not unlike like an audition, something like that. But by the end, it's really mental and over the top, and could be, like Ichi the Killer, or the although not quite as gory and graphic as something like Ichi the Killer, maybe even more like The Happiness of the Katakuris, with some of the practical effects that are on display. Yeah, it's not the most in-depth or psychological or kind of horror that gets under your skin or anything like that, but as something that is just absolutely a riot to watch, just something that's really fun, really entertaining. This was the absolute highlight of the shorts program for me. And yeah, I definitely look forward to seeing more stuff by this director, whether it's more shorts or, if it's a feature. If it was made in this style again, I think I would definitely watch that. And yeah, it even has entertaining credits, as there is a character in it who is a mean-looking taxi driver, who for no reason is wearing an eye patch, who is it's genuinely credited as just badass taxi driver, which, it's the little things that sometimes are so entertaining. But yes, that was my number one short of this year's Dead by Dawn. And now we go to look at the best new feature films shown this year. So at this year's Dead by Dawn, there was nine new feature films shown. And out of all of them, I thought most of them were good. I thought it was a strong lineup this year, which is to be expected. You would expect Dead by Dawn to put on a strong lineup for their 25th anniversary, and they didn't disappoint. Overall, both old and new features, it was a strong showing and a really enjoyable film festival, really enjoyable weekend. And they definitely did not let the Dead by Dawn regulars down. Probably bottom of the heap for me would be The Lullaby, which is a film that didn't really engage me, but had some very interesting ideas, which actually kind of made it more frustrating. And did also have a very good central performance. Going up the ladder a little bit, both Downrange and Trench 11, I felt were middling efforts. I wasn't dead against them. I thought they were both quite fun, in different ways. The Trench 11 was a kind of men on a mission, kind of suicide mission. Dirty Dozen meets kind of Nazi bunker zombie movie, even though not really Nazi because it was World War One. So it was enjoyable enough. And Downrange, yeah, it was kind of like a slasher movie with a sniper instead of a guy running about the woods with a knife, and yeah, it was, I mean, it was decent, but the characters weren't very engaging or sympathetic or anything like that. But it had some good effects, and it had some good kills, it had some good kind of action moments. So it had stuff to it. So, but yeah, both kind of middling for me. And then going up again, there was Monsters, which was a very dark, very heavy, very depressing, but overall decent Taiwanese movie, which was had a man-eating monster in it, but it was really about the evils and horror of bullying and being led down the wrong path and being made to be a voyeur. And yeah, it was a slog at times, but I think in the end, when it's all stacked up, a worthwhile slog. It was pretty decent. After that, we have I, Zombies, which was a Peruvian comedy, and Spookers, which was a New Zealand documentary about a haunted house, like a family who runs a haunted house, and the kind of not the kind of family you would expect to run a haunted house. And frankly, both of those were really good, and when I was doing this top three, they were kind of they were also in contention. Like I kind of had I was settled on the top three. I had the top three in mind, but yeah, I mean those films were really good, and it's sad to leave them out because iZombies I felt started quite weak, but really built up strength throughout the film, and when its kind of characters and colors bled through, it became an awesome film. And Spookers was inventively staged and a very interesting documentary that was not just your run-of-the-mill talking heads documentary at all. Did interesting things, was interestingly filmed, and gave an interesting insight into the lives of performers of All Haunted House. But none of those made it into the top three. So now we unveil my top three. In at number three is Knuckleball, brought to us by Canadian director Michael Peterson, who actually appeared at the Dead by Dawn Festival and gave a very entertaining Q&A after the screening of his film. You can hear more of his thoughts on the movie in an upcoming episode of New Horror Express, where he will be our guest, not next month, but the month after. So you can look forward to that. Anyway, back to the movie. The most direct comparison that's been made to this movie is Home Alone. And that's just because it's about a kid who's in peril and has to fend off an attacker himself. I suppose the comparison also runs to the fact that, the kid in this film, played very well by Luca Velasquez, makes a bunch of, homemade traps and stuff. And yeah, but I mean, the comparison really is only skin deep. There's not much more to it than that. Just those two things. I mean, even in the setup, the kid hasn't been just left. Is the kid has been left with a granddad played by Michael Ironside. And guess what? Michael Ironside is not the main baddie. No, he's still very Michael Ironside-y. He's still scary, intimidating, and gruff, but not the lead villain. Which came as a surprise, based on previous Michael Ironside roles that we've all seen. But he's actually a quite a lovable character. In the end, no, the character who is menacing our lead kid is actually played by Monroe Chambers, who is playing even more against type than Michael Ironside is playing against type, as you may recognize Monroe Chambers from his lead role in cult film Turbo Kid. To go back to Luca Velasquez, the who plays the lead character, it's just is he is one of the absolute strengths of the movie. I mean, this kid is only 12 years old and is in nearly every scene of this movie. It's, to carry a movie at any age for any actor, to have a movie on your back like that, to be in most scenes, is a very difficult thing to do. And yet this kid does it beautifully, totally naturally. It doesn't seem cumbersome at all. It gives a very mature performance, but not so mature that it seems like a kind of Hollywood brat thing where it seems almost unbelievable as a child, even though he's still a child. There's still that childlikeness, but also a maturity and strength there. He plays those two things really well, and Yeah, overall it's a very good film. It's a very taut, tense thriller. It's possibly darker than I imagined it would be. I think just coming in fairly cold on it, there was a couple of other horror Home Alone type movies that came out at the tail end of last year, Better Watch Out, and The Babysitter, which were very much comedic, very much 80s throwbacks, and I thought, oh, it might be like that. Nope, not at all. Not this is a much darker, grittier, much more, it's not totally realistic, but it's at least semi-realistic, and it's much more interested in the characters and the psychologies of characters. It's a character-driven movie, and there's some really nice character scenes in this, particularly when the child goes to Monroe Chambers' character's house, and they have a very tense conversation. You don't know whether to this character is sympathetic or he's a psychopath. Turns out he's a psychopath. But yeah, it's a very tense, it's very well set up scene. And yeah, there's a bunch of scenes like that. And overall, like I said, a very good picture and very well deserving to be in our number three spots. Initially, on the Facebook Live videos, I gave this film a 6.5 out of 10, and I realize now that I was being a little bit mean. That this film is worth at least a 7 out of 10. If you can, track it down. But now we move on to my number two movie, which is Rabbit, the feature debut from Luke Shanahan. This movie tells the story of an Australian medical student, Maud, who's living in Germany, whose twin sister the year before had disappeared. Maud is totally convinced that her twin sister is still alive, that she's still out there somewhere. The rest of her family have kind of given up hope, but she has these visions. She can see things, and she thinks she can see where her twin sister is. She's out there somewhere. She's been kidnapped or something like that. And then she goes back to Australia, from Germany, to try and find her sister. And this is the kind of launching pad for the movie. A movie that is a mental movie. There's a lot of things that happen here. There's a lot of twists and turns, a lot of things you wouldn't expect. It is a unique watch. It's a very interesting watch. There's a lot going on here, and there's a lot I can't really discuss without totally ruining the movie. Some of the things I can discuss is it is very much a movie of two halves, and that seems like a cliche, that seems like a silly thing to say, but almost literally, there is a scene in the middle where there is a red screen, there is a lot of noise coming at you, and we shift in tone, in gear, completely. The first half of the movie is not like the second half at all. Again, without trying to give too much away, the second half almost veers into there's some science fiction territory there, and yeah, I cannot say any more. But other things I can mention are the fact that the lead actress who plays both twins, Maud and Cleo, Adelaide Clemens, is absolutely excellent. She gives a truly powerful, truly impressive performance, and is absolutely the central glue that holds the film together. It is a very very stylish looking film. It looks absolutely beautiful. The cinematography is spot on. The score is also very good. The way, the use of sound, the use of these very loud moments of, in moments of high tension, and then suddenly the sound being totally sucked out and we just got silence, and that really, it's really effectively used. It's used a bunch of times throughout the movie. It's really effective. It's not, I mean, for an Australian movie, it doesn't feel like an Australian horror. And I mean, I suppose that's just based on what has become the kind of stereotype of what Australian horror is in the last kind of, just over 10 years, 10, 15 years, which is particularly based on heavily on Wolf Creek and these kind of outback kind of slasher pictures or things like that. This feels very European in a way. Particularly, you would see the influences of Yorgos Lanthimos and Michael Haneke. I mean, I don't know if these are influences that were on the director's mind or anything like that, but that was directors that I saw come up. There was moments that were, of kind of stilted dialogue and the way people interact in a way that kind of withholds information that was not unlike the killing of the sacred deer. And there's a clinicalness to the look of the film that is, I would say, is a lot like Funny Games. It's certainly certain parts of the movie. There is other parts of the movie that strangely, on a totally different tack, reminded me of pictures of the 70s. I know the director has talked himself about 70s influence, particularly the Wicker Man was one that came to mind when watching it. I mean, it's a movie that's hard to describe, and particularly hard to describe because, by describing it, it kind of spoils the plot, and the less you know, the better in this type of film. But it is a bizarre, entertaining, mind-melting, psychological thriller that has really tons of twists and turns. Is very unique. It's there. I can't think of another film, even though I've mentioned Touchstones. I can't think of another film that's really like it. Not totally anyway. And it's definitely an impressive calling card for a debut feature, and I think that I will definitely be checking out more films by Luke Shanahan whenever they come out. And I think you should check out this film wherever you can find it. I don't know if it will be available in cinemas or if it'll be getting a DVD release in the UK or some other hitting some streaming site. I'm not sure, but if you see it, come up. I definitely think you should check it out. But that is all for my thoughts on this movie. And now we roll on to my number one movie of this year's Dead by Dawn, which, if you followed the Facebook Live videos, you already know is Dave Made a Maze, which is the directorial debut from actor Bill Watterson. And also, is wasn't only my film of Dead by Dawn, but was the unanimous winner of the Audience Award for best new feature shown at the festival. So My opinion has not always concurred with the audience. In previous years, I have gone to the Dead by Dawn Festival, but this year it definitely did. Dave Made the Maze was a hilarious and very inventive film, which tells a story about artist Dave, who has never completed a project in his life, and in all his frustration, decides to make a cardboard fort in his living room, only to get lost in his own cardboard fort. His girlfriend comes home to find him trapped in this cardboard fort that he's built for himself. And yeah, at the start of the film, it just looks like a normal cardboard thing that a child would build. But obviously, once we go inside the world of this cardboard fort, we see that, much like the TARDIS, it is bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I was somewhat torn in terms of voting for this film and in terms of making it my number one film of Dead by Dawn this year, because it's not really a horror film. It's inspired by horror films. There are certainly films that it's inspired by, but it is definitely more of a comedy, and a very funny comedy at that. It is a comedy that certainly, not unlike something like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, there is a lot of references here. And like that film, there's video game references, but there's references to other horror movies, there's references to classic 80s movies. There's definitely a big 80s influence on this film. You can see nods to the Indiana Jones movies and Labyrinth, but there's nods to loads of other things as well. There's nods to Greek mythology. There's as there is a cardboard minotaur in this cardboard maze. So there's lots of references to a whole bunch of other things as well. And obviously there's references to Labyrinth itself, the Henson movie. And there is it's kind of like a fantasy comedic, version, a slacker version of Cube, the 90s horror movie, sci-fi, well, sci-fi horror movie. Yeah, there, I mean, it's packed with different references, but then it's not just all about the references. It's not just kind of, oh, look, remember this movie? Because, I mean, that can become quite grating. If it's done well, it can be very entertaining, but if it's done badly, it can just be like, yeah, okay, why am I not watching that movie that it's referencing? The most impressive thing here is the effects. There is lots of inventive staging in this movie. There's puppetry, there's stop motion animation, there's lots of in camera effects. It's just, it's that keeps you fascinated, it keeps you really interested. I mean, it's an absolute gem of a movie in those terms. In story and character terms, it's not the strongest. I mean, it's still very funny. There is, but if you don't like that kind of slacker comedy humor, then that's going to probably put you off quite a lot, even if you do enjoy the references or you enjoy the staging. It is that type of humor. It is that kind of, stoner slacker kind of humor. And if you don't like that, then you might be put off. And like a lot of these kind of indie comedies that have a lot of references. Their female characters don't get that much to do, apart from kind of being the characters who kind of roll their eyes or just kind of look down at the kind of idiot men around them, and which in real life that would absolutely be the correct response to a lot of the things that people in these types of movies are doing. But that so there is those weaknesses, but those weaknesses are completely outshone by just you can by just the invention of this movie, and how kind of fun and quirky and bizarre some of the things are. Some of the scenes that people are turned into cardboard creations, and people get killed, and where it would be maybe like in certain type of horror movie it'd be like a geyser of blood. This is like silly string, things like this. And there's different ways in which they do gore effects in quite a sweet, quirky way that you wouldn't expect. And that's the kind of thing that makes this movie stand out and made this movie, for me, the movie of Dead by Dawn, which, I mean, it was a close call. The other movie, there was other very strong movies. And the previous two movies that I talked about, Knuckleball and Rabbit, both were really good watches. But there was just something about this movie, something about its, I keep saying the word invention, but that is the word. It's just a very inventive movie. And it keeps you laughing throughout. It has a very short running time. It's only 80 minutes. And end to end, this movie, if you're of a certain mind, like I said before, there will be a certain people will be turned off by the type of humor, the silliness of the humor. But I'm not one of them. I quite like that style of comedy. There's yeah, it tickles my funny bone, and there's not much more I can really say about this movie, except that if you come across it again, much like the other two movies, if you see it on DVD or on a streaming service, or if it gets a release, hopefully, all these movies will get a cinema release. I mean, that's the best place to see movies, in the cinema. And if it does get that, then I would definitely recommend that you go out and check this movie out. It'll be a fun night out for all. But that's it. That's my complete roundup of the Dead by Dawn movies, my top three in each of the three categories. And now we move on to my interview with Jill Gervaisian. Hi, Jill. Welcome to New Horror Express. It's good to have you on the
Hello.
show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. We've got lots to talk about. You've got lots of things on the go. And most currently, you're obviously prepping for the premiere of your short 42 Counts, which I've read premieres at the Chattanooga Festival in just under 2 weeks.
Yes, on April 6th, I'm trying to get the date right in my head, we premiere at the Chattanooga Film Festival, and it actually plays twice, so it plays again that Sunday evening. And a lot of, I will be there along with a good chunk of the cast and crew.
Excellent. Excellent. The poster for the short 42 Counts, it says it's based on a true story. Is this like a Fargo based on a true story, or based on an actual true story?
No, it's actually based on a true story. A very creepy story that happened here where I'm from, in Kansas City, Missouri. A few years ago. It's weird. I haven't decided how much I want to talk about the true story, because it really tells my whole movie.
Yeah, but, you don't want to give too much away.
But the film is less horror than everything else I've done. Really what I wanted to do with it was the real story. I'm pretty close to it, only a few degrees away from the people that it happened to. And right. The story just always stuck in my head because I'm very interested in psychology and very, I guess, messed up psychology. Yeah. And I'm very interested in what people go through and like the trauma. And really with this short, I was just trying to show people, or like kind of get people to walk away thinking like, what would it be like to live with, like after discovering something like this, like the aftermath more mm-hmm. so. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what I should say about the true story, because yeah, it does spoil it, but it's not so much a film that relies on a reveal. So,
the basic premise is we have two girls who are watching scary movies in a rented apartment, but they're rented by their boss or something. They find something much scarier than scary movies.
That's correct.
It seems to be the basic
setup. And you wouldn't believe how hard it is to write a synopsis for a short film, because you're trying to make it sound exciting without saying exactly what happens. But they're also, shorts are so short that, it's almost hard to market them without just telling everybody what happens.
Yeah, without just being like, this is the entire story right here.
Yeah. It's a hard line to ride with that. I have a good friend, Jill Towerman, who has helped. She does a lot of copywriting. And so she's really good with succinct, like writing like short things that are, enticing. So she's helped me with like all of my synopsises for all my films.
It must be very difficult as well to do trailers for short films, because some of your shorts have trailers, and I imagine that's very difficult to be like, not just be showing basically the short.
Yeah, they're kind of, I haven't made one for 42 Counts yet, and I'm considering not doing it at all because the film's only 8 minutes long. Mm-hmm. But, normally we just make like a 15-second little teaser thing that, doesn't really tell you anything anyway. but it kind of seems like I feel like I'm slacking not having put one out yet. But honestly, we kind of did this all to the last minute. I submitted the film to Chattanooga Film Festival unfinished. Mm-hmm. So it was accepted, and we then had a very serious deadline to finish the film at that point. So that's really why we don't have a trailer yet. We only finished the film a couple weeks ago.
Wow. That's we've obviously done that right up to the wire then, eh?
Yes, which I'm all about preaching that that's not how you should operate as a filmmaker. You should not plan a premiere before your film is done. I just kind of feel like it's kind of jinxing it, and a little too you're a little too ahead of yourself if that's what you're doing. But I was confident that we would get it finished, and I like deadlines. I think everyone works better with a real deadline.
There's an unmovable deadline.
Yes, like this one's actually real, guys. It's not just like a fake deadline like we normally create.
Absolutely, that's it must be You must feel a lot of pressure on that to be like, we've got this premiere, it's creeping up on us, and now we've got to get this in the can.
Exactly. But so actually we submitted it unfinished, and it was kind of a last minute decision. That was because another film that I worked on that I helped produce, it's called BFF Girls. It's playing at Chattanooga as well. So I was already hoping to attend, and I thought, well, I wonder if they would be, if they could possibly screen my new film, and then it would be
Both.
I'd be going down there for both, and that would obviously be very exciting. And we worked that out somehow. But yeah, actually, BFF Girls is directed by Brian Lenano. I helped produce it with him. It made its world premiere just this past weekend at the Boston Underground Film Festival. And from what I was not there, but from what I've heard, it was a hit. It's like a comedy fantasy, live action anime crazy of thing of a film. So it's the type of film that it's a lot of fun to watch with people.
That sounds excellent. That sounds definitely something I would want to watch. Is there any plans for both of those movies, for the BFF Girls and for 42 Counts? Is there any plans for more festivals or festivals outside the States or anything?
Absolutely. We're submitting both to a lot of festivals. This is just the start for both of them. And it's interesting once you get to know the film festival kind of circuit, especially for genre film, like the genre festivals specifically that are more catered to horror and thriller and sci-fi. All of those, not surprisingly, are kind of more so all jammed into the fall. So, I mean, it's kind of understandable. October, Halloween, everyone wants to have their horror
That
film festival in October. But
makes sense.
it's interesting. It really, the festival season picks up like crazy at starting like end of August through November. But we have submitted to festivals that are sprinkled through the summer. But how this whole the submitting process works is you submit months ahead of before you find out, and we're all the filmmakers are just like waiting every day to get a good email, or hoping for a good email to come through. Sometimes you don't find out till like a few weeks before the festival if you got in or not. It's a nerve-wracking thing.
In the interviews I've done so far, I've talked kind of the politics of festivals with kind of everybody I've talked with, and it sounds like a very stressful experience in terms of getting in and not knowing.
Yeah, you kind of just have to. That's kind of I think a big part of filmmaking. There's tons of like going for things, and you're gonna fail at a lot of them. Like that's just part of it. So you have to, I think, accept that that's going to happen. So you're not disappointed every time, because that's like way too much energy wasted. And you're like, honestly, you have to. I mean, I go into it assuming that there are gonna be rejections. I don't expect anything. Of course, you still get disappointed from time to time, but I submit my films to so many festivals that it doesn't really bother me, because I'm like, I'm at least going to get rejected to half from half of these. I already know that's going to happen. So you just kind of have to just submit it and then try to like forget about it, which is probably not actually possible, but you get to try.
Absolutely. Try and remove yourself from it a little bit, and not take it as a personal thing. It's the politics of these sorts of events, that some things get in, some things don't, and it can be a bit of a random nature to it.
And there's so many things that go into it. You could have made the best film of the year and still not, you're not going to get into every festival, because every festival doesn't want to have the same exact lineup for one. Or like, with shorts especially, they'll play them in blocks, like a 2 hour long block, 10 films. And if the films don't, play well together, like, you know, programming is an art of its own. That you'll go to festivals where sometimes like every other short's like a totally different tone, and it's like, what the hell am I watching? You know, like it's a comedy and then it's a drama. But yeah. You know, a good programmer knows how to like make them flow so you're not like and down with emotions. You don't know what you're supposed to be watching, you know. So sometimes it's just like your film just didn't fit in, or it was too long or too short. Or actually, that's the case for make your film as short as humanly possible if you want to get in places. The longer it is, the scarier it is.
Because in terms of the festivals, I've seen in the horror film festivals, that does seem to be very much the case, that shorts are grouped in kind of thematically, and there tends to be like a section of maybe 8-10 short films all put in the one strand and shown at the one time. So I can understand that maybe it's just that not being quite in the lineup, not quite meshing with the lineup that they had kind of planned.
That's totally it. I don't know what I was going to say after that. Sorry.
That's fine. It's no problem. I was just going to talk a little bit about obviously you've talked about BFF Girls and you produced that, and you have your own production company, Six Tape Productions. How did that come about? How did you found that?
Well, it sounds cooler than it is, I think. I more so started it just with my first film. I wanted to have some sort of brand of my own that wasn't just my name. Because I've gone by Jill Six as a nickname also for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to incorporate that still into my brand, but I didn't want to go by that as a director. Because I'm like, what director uses a nickname? It's kind of demeaning to me. but I just started it with my first film. I just wanted to it's like my LLC, so the way I can, you know, basically file my taxes separately than doing it myself.
Yeah.
But as I kept making stuff, then we made The Stylist a couple years ago, and Najara, who stars in that, she we've just become very close, and
she also stars in 42 Counts, right?
Yes. And with 42 Counts, she actually helped produce it as well. And when she offered to do that, I asked her if she wanted to be like officially part of Six Tape, because like it makes sense, you know, you're in all my movies, we work together, I want to keep working together. So she's also a kind of a producer in Six Tape as well.
So how many how many of you run Six Tape? Is quite a tight group?
I think a lot of filmmakers, we find, you know, the people that we collaborate well with, get along well with, and you just want to keep working with them, because it's hard to find that. That's probably one of the hardest things in filmmaking, is slowly finding like your team.
Yeah.
Najara is one of the most talented actors that has ever lived. People don't even know what that woman is capable of yet. I feel like it's criminal that she's not like an A-list actor yet. But also Eric Havens is like part of the team. He's a writer, and he wrote my first film, Call Girl, and we co-wrote The Stylist, and we've co-wrote a feature length of The Stylist as well.
Right.
Which we're hoping to get made someday in the near future. But really, it's mostly just me, and I just like to have I'm just all about branding. That's very a big thing, and it is very beneficial. But I really work a lot with Method Media, which is another production company here in Kansas City. They made 42 Counts with me, and we've made 4 music videos. Like in the last year, we've produced 5 things together, hoping to continue that.
Excellent. You mentioned Najara, and you mentioned The Stylist. which in some ways seems to have become your signature short. It's certainly won a lot of awards, a lot of acclaim, rightly so. And I agree with your opinion that the Jara is an excellent actress, who gives that character a lot of emotion and depth. And you also mentioned earlier of about your interest in psychology, and there is a lot of things going on there, messed up psychology. There's a, for a 15-minute short, there's a lot of depth to it.
Thank you. Yeah, that when we, I don't even know where to begin, but when we wrote that, I've also been a hairstylist for over a decade. So that's where the idea came from. It's like, why isn't there already a horror movie about a hairstylist that kills people? That seems very obvious to me. Like you'd think, I went this like psychological or serious route, but you'd think there would be like kind of a fun, silly slasher version of it as well, but not yet. Maybe I'll also make one of those. But yeah, I'm really interested in psychology. Like, and that's why the film, more traditionally, horror films are told from the perspective of the victims, not the killer. And my favorite films are the ones that where you get to know the killer more, or it's from their perspective. I just think it's very interesting. That's why we're dying to make the full length of the stylist, because we'd be able to go more into who she is and why she does what she does. And I've spent a scary amount of time reading about serial killers and why they do what they do and how they became that way, because I want her to feel real in that way.
So is that your particular one of your particular favorite types of horror? When you're talking about horror movies that dig deeper into the killer and not necessarily told from the victim perspective, I mean,
Yeah.
what would be some of your
Or like
favorites?
ones, yeah, or even ones that will, they don't necessarily even need to be from the killer's perspective, but will, also like offer more about them, make them a little more sympathetic. Like they're not so flat. Like flat monsters are not interesting to me. But like like Leatherface, I think is a great example. Really, when the stylist idea started for me, she was like a female Leatherface, which is very similar to him. Like they both wear the skin, they both become the people, like try to act like they are the person whose skin they're wearing. And the original text is not all these remakes, but in the original, that dinner scene when you see the family interacting with each other, I think that's one of the most fascinating and scary things about the film, seeing how like this is like a, this dysfunctional family, like this is a normal day for them. Like, and Leatherface isn't really like, he's portrayed now as this monster, but he's really like, he cowers through the whole film. Like, he's told what to do. I don't really feel like he has his own like motivations. He's just like doing what he's told, like helping his family. Like, that's how I view him as morbid, but like, I don't see him as like someone who wants to go around killing people, like, Jason. He's more just doing what he's supposed to do to feed his family, as fucked up as that is. I also think like Candyman is a great one. You get to know his story, which his story is like tragic, and he's
That's
also
just a weird.
scary.
Candyman's a kind of weird in that sense, to where you kind of genuinely empathize with the killer.
Yeah. Candyman, I don't know. I feel like that movie should be spoken about in like so much higher regard. Like, I don't know why it's not as, I feel like everyone loves it, but it's not spoken about as much. Like, it's not on the status of like Halloween, when to me, it's definitely as good as Halloween. And
It's
yeah, like
not kind of
it's
got
fun.
that kind of classic status.
Yeah, like it's got, it's maybe because it's still, it's the 90s, maybe it's not old enough yet, but I mean, that's old as hell to young kids now. But he's, I watched that, was one of the first scary movies I ever saw. I definitely saw it too young, but that made it, so scary. Just like him appearing in that garage and saying Helen, like he's horrifying. And yet at the same time, like you said, you feel like you're so sad for him. Like, and I think that's what's interesting about that film is Helen's journey is really to like figure out how to help him.
Yeah.
Also, but then like other films like May is, you know, told from her perspective, and she's obvious. It's not a really a straightforward horror movie, but have you seen May?
Yeah, I've seen May. It's a very interesting film, and like you say, not kind of straight up horror, but this kind of fantasy almost is thriller. But again, a character, you obviously it's a killer, but still somebody you empathize with and root for in a way, in a weird way.
Exactly. Like the stylist is so inspired by May. I was worried I was going to get called out on it, but no one really, not many people said it. And then Maniac, which of course he's also a scalping guy.
Yeah. Yeah. In the
same way too. Like, you know, he's always crying and holding his mannequins. Like that one manages to be equally the, like, you know, fun 80s slasher, but always also has that, like, that deeper layer to it. I like Maniac a lot.
Absolutely. Maniac's a really good film. And Maniac is one, it's interesting you bring up me. Not a film I was thinking about when I watched The Stylist. But Maniac did come to mind, and the Leatherface thing did come to mind. But in no way did I think like, oh, this is just like Maniac, or this is just like Texas Chainsaw, because I think it's its own beast, and it has its own style, to, you know, no pun intended.
Thank you. Yeah, well, what's interesting is I actually didn't see the original Maniac till maybe after I wrote this. I'd only seen the remake. I'm sorry, horror fans. I know that's horrible. You have to see the original first. Yeah. But I saw the remake at a film festival, and I actually still like the remake a lot. But then I bought the original. And so I'm like, fair, that, really, that really wasn't, yeah. So that movie really wasn't like super ingrained in my history. So it's not as much of an inspiration, but once I watched it, I'm like, wow, this is a lot of similarities. But then when I think about it, like we're all those villains we're talking about, all those characters, they all have a very similar, like, psychological makeup, and that's why they're all so similar. Like, all kind of have the same reactions, and they're all like, they're the mommy boy killer. Like, that all came from, you know, the real guy, Ed Gein, that everyone has based this, like, serial killer psychology off of.
Absolutely. You know, famously the inspiration for Psycho and Leatherface, and yeah, it seems to be that he was kind of the blueprint for a lot of these movies, and that's just been continued over the decades.
He really is. I mean, sometimes, you know, like a character will pop up in something new or whatever I'm watching. I'm like, oh, it's another Leatherface character. Like, so many characters have been based on this one, you know, crazy guy who really only killed a couple people and has become like the most infamous serial killer of all time.
Yeah. So are you working, are you just purely working on a stylist feature, or are you working on other shorts?
Well, not any new shorts right now. I mean, we did just finish this other one.
Yeah, literally just weeks ago finished 42 Counts, I suppose.
It is. These things take so much more work and time than anyone thinks. And when you're done with it, you just, like, it's nice to kind of have a moment to celebrate, like, all the work that you've done. But you have to keep moving on. Whenever you go out with a film to festivals, all anyone asks you is, like, what you're doing next. And if you don't have an answer, then they're like, well, what are you doing? I actually have a couple feature projects that are trying, we're trying to get off the ground, which is, you know, most, the hardest thing is finding your financing. Cause I haven't made a feature yet, obviously. So this is a big difference in, far as all that goes. So that's a process I'm learning, that you just never know how long it's going to take, and you just do whatever we can in the meantime. I have awesome producers on both of the projects. We've submitted some to like a film market, and just continuing to grind away. And I've also kind of teamed up with Eric Stoles, not the redheaded actor that everyone thinks of when I said that. This writer, Eric Stoles, who wrote Late Phases, that a werewolf film that came out a few years ago. That's freaking awesome. We've connected over the past year, and we've got a couple of things we're also trying to write together. It's a weird situation. Everyone I know has the same name. My writer on the stylist is also Eric. So I've just got I only write with Eric, so I'm learning, apparently. But yeah, you kind of just have to have like multiple projects trying to get some traction in hopes that one, you know, will.
Takes off.
So it's just constantly trying to do stuff. But on the stylist, this has been somewhat announced, so I can talk about it. I have David Lawson helping produce it, and he is a very successful producer. He's produced everything Justin Moorhead and I just said their names backward. Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson have directed a Spring Resolution,
right.
The Endless. Yeah. He produced Trash Fire and 68 Kill. So I've admired his work for years. So we're just dying to make this movie. And he is going to be in Chattanooga as well. And he's teaching a class actually about taking your short and developing it into a feature. And he'll be using the stylist as the example in that class. So I think we'll also be showing the film. So I've got like three projects showing at Chattanooga.
Excellent. It sounds like a very, very busy weekend for you there.
I love nothing more than going to film festivals, so they're just the most fun thing in the world.
It sounds like you do a lot in terms of just like the film community as well, and the horror film community. As the first guest I had on the show was a Canadian filmmaker called Torin Langan. And he said that you run like monthly horror nights in Kansas.
Yes, I showed his film Three Dead Trick-or-Treaters back in the fall. I've been doing, it's called Slaughter Movie House. It's a monthly screening. And we've been doing that for almost 6 years. That's actually how I started making films. I was first just doing that and meeting all these filmmakers, and I started slowly helping on some people's work just because I was so interested in it, wanted to learn more, and then got to the point where I felt like I could make my own movie, and then I haven't stopped since. But it's always the first Monday of every month, so we have it coming up here next week, and it's free. We've got a local theater that we started it in a bar, and a year into it, we moved to a local theater, and they're just super cool with it. I mean, they let us do this for free. It's free for people to attend. It's just all for the love of film. The only negative part of that is that we have no budget, so I can't get certain films that I would like to show. I'm like, whatever I can get my hands on, but more successful films want a screening fee, or they get picked up by a distributor super duper fast. We try to get them real quick before that happens. We're showing Bong of the Living Dead at our next one, which will be quite a fun experience.
that sounds like an interesting film.
It seemed appropriate with an April 420 theme we were going. We'll show everything from, if you've seen Torin's film, which is a very like serious-toned
It's quite.
anthology, and then we'll show like an exploitation film or something like just super funny and ridiculous. Really like any genre stuff we're interested in.
Well, I mean, that's good. It's I think it's good to have like a kind of broad taste in horror or in genre generally, you know? Wow. Well, it's certainly been great chatting to you. I wish you luck with 42 counts. I've enjoyed your shorts so far. I've seen a few of them. I th saw Call Girl, The Stylist, the short Grammy that you did. I've enjoyed them all so far, so I'm sure I'll enjoy 42 counts. And
Thank you. Did
I
you, where did you see the stylist? I'm just curious if you were at a
I
festival.
saw The Stylist on Shudder. It's
Oh, okay.
available on Shudder in the UK.
Yes. I was wondering if maybe you went to Fright Fest.
In Glasgow.
Actually, we played the one, stylist played London, but
London Fright Fest.
yeah. Grammy, no, actually Grammy almost played the Glasgow one, but we were Grammy was also released on Crypt TV, and at most big time festivals you are what I'm losing my words, you're not like
No.
you basically you're not it, you can't be online publicly to be considered, like that's against the rules. So like last minute, I was like, well, we can't play that. But I have submitted 42 counts to a couple of festivals in the UK. So I'm fingers crossed it gets into one or both of them.
That's yeah. Hopefully, I'll be able to check it out. Weirdly, like you said previously, the most of the film festivals are awesome, but the film festivals the horror film festivals we have in Scotland here, Glasgow Fright Fest was last month, and Dead by Dawn in Edinburgh is this month. So we're going against the grain in terms of the festival calendar.
That is good, honestly, though, because they need to be spread out. There's way too many at the same time of the year.
Well, I wish you luck with that, and I hope to check it out. And definitely, I really like The Stylist, and definitely, you know, when you get the feature film together, I will seek that out whenever it comes down the pipe.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
That was my guest, Jill Gavargia-Zeon there, who I would like to thank for appearing on this month's episode. I certainly enjoyed interviewing her, and I certainly hope you enjoyed listening to the interview and the rest of the episode for that matter. And if you did, please feel free to like, share, and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. As well as that, you can give us a like on our Facebook page and give us a follow on Twitter. However, that is all for another month of New Horror Express. Be sure to tune in next month when we have an interview with Gabriela Staniszewska, as well as much, much more. See you then.